Excellent. All right. Welcome back. We took a few weeks off since we did the third Perek. We are back here. Maybe we'll just take a moment and review where we're up to at this point. So we are discussing the book of Ezra. The book of Ezra takes place during the first exile, and the first temple was destroyed a long time ago. It was destroyed by the Babylonians, and then afterwards the Babylonians lost to the Persians slash Medes, and the Persians slash Medes, right, were controlling the entire area, including the area of Babel. And we begin the book of Ezra, or we began the book of Ezra, by discussing that Cyrus, the king of Persia, got up and announced that he hereby gives permission to the Jews to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And not only that, he supports it, and he supports it by providing the Jewish people with the kalim, with the vessels of the first Beis HaMikdash that he had. And he gives this to them, and we read in the first few prakim that they began to build the temple, they began to build the walls of Jerusalem, they put down the foundations, and they had a very basic Beis HaMikdash built at the time. There was a list we had gone through of all the people who had traveled from Babel back to Israel. The numbers were underwhelming, shall we say. It's approximately 43,000 men are listed there. And given the millions and millions that we are talking about, that is a particularly small number. Fast forward to trying to get back after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, many people point to that to now out nowadays, right? The people in Babel were successful, they were financially comfortable, and therefore why would they want to move back to this barbaric country of Israel at the time? And unfortunately, people say that we never learned from our lessons here. We in America, in Europe, etc., have become very comfortable, and therefore in 1948 and the years afterwards, the people who actually moved to Israel, the numbers were not what they could have been. And since just like Ezra, as we will see, was not overly successful because he did not have the buy-in, some people bemoan the fact that we've never really bought in to the level that we should moving into Israel. Here we are 70 years later. There are more Jews in Israel than in any other country. The majority of the Jews are still not in Israel, but there are more Jews in Israel than any other country. So here we are. The Jews have moved back to Israel, not in mass, not in the numbers that we would like to have seen, but there are Jews who have moved back to Israel, and they have rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash. We had left off with the dedication of what was the basic Beis HaMikdash at the time, and it points out that from the time of the first exile until now is 70 years, which means that there are people that were able to have seen both. There were people who had seen the first Beis HaMikdash and now are experiencing the second Beis HaMikdash, right? If you were 15 years old at the time of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, you're 85 years old now, right? Which is, not ridiculous numbers. Right, 85 used to seem to me to be a very old age, and now it doesn't seem as old as it used to be, right? So, and it says that the people who had in fact experienced both were crying. They said that what they had in the second Beis HaMikdash was nothing like what they had in the first Beis HaMikdash. So that is the background. With that, we begin the fourth parak, and things take a turn for the worst here. So, Vayishmu Tzare Yehuda Vinyamim Kibinei Hagola Bonim Hechol Adonai Elohei Yisrael. And the enemies of the people who are living in Yehuda and Binyamin, remember, we're dealing with a small amount of people, we are trying to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, because of that, we are going to be concentrated around Jerusalem, right? So therefore, Jerusalem is, of course, on the border. Right, the Makom is on the border of Yehuda and Binyamin, so everybody's only living there. Right, nobody is living up in Netanya, no one's living in Metula, no one's living in Haifa, right, no one's living in the Hebron. Everybody is basically around Yerushalayim because we're not dealing with big numbers. And all of a sudden, there are enemies who hear about this, and they're not happy that the Jews are moving back to town. Who are these enemies? So if you look at the source sheet in the first source, it says, Tzarei Yehuda Binyamin, Heim Ha'akum, Asher Hoshiv Sancher Be'eretz Yisrael. Now, if you remember, Sancheriv was the king of Assyria. Sancheriv was the one who threw out the 10 tribes. And Sancheriv, in fact, made major headway into Yehuda as well. Sancheriv attacked and captured the city of Lachish, which is the second largest city in Yehuda. Anybody who happens to be in the Metropolitan Museum of Art or in the British Museum will get to see the Lachish reliefs that on the Assyrian palaces, the walls were adorned with the Jews going into exile. And those are the Jews of Lachish, the second largest city. Now, why wasn't the Jews of Jerusalem, which probably was Sancheriv's original plan? The reason was because if you read in Malachim, Sancheriv surrounded Jerusalem with over 100,000 soldiers, and miraculously in the time of Chizkiah, they all died out and we were saved. So Sancheriv was a very powerful king, and Sancheriv was able to control a very large kingdom through the policy of resettlement, which meant that when he would take over a country, he would take out the population and he would move them someplace else. Then he would move out take a different population and move it into there. Why did he do that? The reason is simple. That would stop rebellion. If I am living in, fill in the country, I'm living in Syria, and I've been Syrian for the last 300 years, and a foreign nation comes in, I'm going to fight, right, to bring back things to order. But if I'm Syrian and you move me to Turkey, I don't care if I'm under the Turkish government or under the Assyrian, it doesn't make a difference to me. So therefore he used, Sancheriv, we'll discuss a little later if it was Sancheriv, used this resettlement. So we know from Malachim that when the 10 tribes were taken away, there were people from different countries that were brought in. Most notably were people from the nation of Kuta. And the people there were called Kutim. Right? Who are these Kutim? These Kutim are some foreign nation. And we learn in Malachim that the Kutim moved in, and at some point, you know, they reached out to Sancheriv and they say, no, by the way, thank you very much. Israel's very beautiful. We've really developed a taste for falafel. You know, it's very good to be here. However, you know, there's one minor issue that we have, and that lions keep on eating us. And you know, we'd really appreciate if we could put an end to that somehow. This has just really been a drag. So the Sancheriv reaches out to leaders of the Jewish community, to rabbis, and they say, you know, what's going on here? So they explain that the land of Israel doesn't do particularly well with Avodah Zarah, doesn't do well with idolatry. So that's why they're having this problem. So it ends up that all of these Kutim end up converting to Judaism. However, the Pasuk tells us, Malachim, that even though they converted and they held themselves out to be Jewish, they still remained idol worshippers.
Did the lions continue to eat them?
No, I guess they were Jewish. I guess once they started eating blintzes and bagels, you know, that was Jewish. And once they stopped paying retail, they were Jewish enough. And that was fine. Right, so the story is, so Rashi says, who are these haters? Yes, Maxwell.
Are we to believe that their descendants are the Samaritans of modern-day Israel, or is this some other group?
There is definitely a strong possibility that they remain in Israel as the Samaritans.
Okay.
Yes. You know, it's been a long time. You know, it's been over two millennia. So, but that being said, I think the Samaritans see themselves as descendants of these Kutim, and we...
So that's what this sounds like.
Correct.
Torah-ish.
Correct. And they seem to be practicing at this point kind of the same things that they were way back when. So that is true. So Rashi tells us, when we talk about the enemies of Yehuda and Binyamin, right? These were these kutim that were brought in by Sancheirev. Kamoshin Amar Vayavo Melch Ashur Mibavo Ume Kuta Ume Avo Ume Hamas Ume Safravim Vayoshiv Osambari Shomron Tachas B'nei Yisrael. So it is these kutim, in fact, that were giving them a hard time. That's understandable because the kuti Jewish religion is very different than the Jewish religion. They're not looking for a Beis HaMikdash. They don't want things to happen, right? The Rambam discusses these kutim at length, and he says, "V'kan is baruch ha-mahim ha-kutim." So the Rambam says, let me explain who these kutim are. He said, "V'hu sha'am shehevi sancheirev me'kuta v'oshivim barei shomron." So these were the people that brought out of Kuta. They were living in Samaria. Here, hey, dalem akosav es Hashem hayu yireim ves Eloheihem hayu ovdim. They feared God, but they still worshipped idols. Elosha archu lahem ayamim ashalamdum es haTorah b'shuk pshuta, and they of course became people who accepted the Torah, but only the written Torah, not the oral Torah. Now, that which they followed very closely. But it was a very different view than what we have. They presented themselves as Jewish people until eventually the rabbis looked into it and found out that no, there's Avodah Zarah going on here. And the Rambam goes on to explain that eventually when the rabbis had this realization, they realized these people aren't Jewish at all. And in fact, at this point, we consider them non-Jews. That's what the Rambam says. Okay, so we have the building going on, and we have opposition from the locals, shall we say. Vayikshu el Zerubbabel v'el Roshei Avos v'yom olahem nivne imachem. So they turn around and they said, we'd like to join you. We would like to partake in the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Because after all, we're Jews like you are. Since Esar Chadon has moved us here, we in fact have been following the Jewish religion just like you are. And we support this. Now, the Mishpat Zov, which is a contemporary sefer on this, I quote this one. This is one of my perhaps my favorite sefer Navi. It's written by a fellow Weiss who lives in Givat Shaul, and I actually at one point someone gave me his phone number. I called him up to tell him how much when I was in Israel, how much I enjoyed his svarim. And you know, in fact, at the time I knew that there was another volume coming out soon. I wanted to know if I could get a little earlier than the other people. The answer was no, but worth a shot. He invited me for Shabbos, though. It was very nice. I didn't go. It didn't work out. But he writes a very, very wonderful svarim, Chassidus Shafela, who that's wonderful work on Navi. So he points out that, wait a second, who's Esar Chadon? Esar Chadon is the son of Sancheirev. So he points out, we'll just do it outside, that in fact, if you look at the Pesukim in Malachim, it never says that Sancheirev moved the Kutim in. What it says, rather, is that the king of Ashur, the Assyrian king, moved them in. It never mentions him by name. Now, we know that Sancheirev was an Assyrian king. We know that Sancheirev, in fact, was the one who took over these lands. So we always assumed, based on our reading of Malachim, that Sancheirev takes over, Sancheirev throws the people out, and the Sancheirev moves them in. And in fact, that's what the Gemara always talks about, right? We have mentioned at some point, for example, the Gemara tells us that there are certain nationalities that are not allowed to convert to Judaism. A Mitzri cannot convert to Judaism. An Edomi cannot convert to Judaism straight out. Over the years, we've had cases, believe it or not, of Egyptians who wanted to convert. Italians that have converted. So the question is, wait a second, I thought that they're not allowed to. Right? Can we say that, sorry, you walk like an Egyptian and therefore you can't possibly convert? So the answer is that the Gemara tells us that no, Bo Sancheirev es Bilbul Asalmos. When Sancheirev came, he undertook this resettlement. And therefore, the people who live in Egypt aren't Egyptian anymore. And the people that live in Italy aren't Italians anymore. Right? Everybody got moved around. So because of that, we don't have any concerns about this. So the Gemara says, Bo'u Sancheiriv. Sancheiriv came. U'bilbil us almost, the Gemara tells us. That Sancheiriv was the one who came along and resettled everybody. So, but here it says that these people get up and say, we've been living here since Esar Chadon put us here. Esar Chadon being the son. So in fact, the Mishpat Sozav is of the opinion that it was Esar Chadon who did it, not Sancheiriv. It was Sancheiriv who started, who announced the policy, but it wasn't actually done until his son, Esar Chadon, actually was in charge of doing it.
So maybe they didn't live there as long as...
Well, again... What? Right, you know, it always says the king, why would they mention the deputy here? So, you know, it's just an interesting insight that you get into Malachim from Ezra. Yes, Maxwell.
So, just like we have some sense when it says Nehodu Ad Kush in the book of Esther, we have some sense that Hodu is India and Kush is Ethiopia or Sudan or something like that. Do we have some sense of where Kut is geographically, even if the Kutim are no longer associated with the land of
Kut? So it's interesting. I don't care so much about Kuta is. What I do care more about is where the Jews got sent. Right? Wherever these people came from, you know, great. Let them go back whenever they want. But in terms of where were the 10 tribes sent, that's a question. The Gemara tells us that it was that these are all places in what the Gemara in Sanhedrin calls Afriki. Now, Afriki sounds an awful lot like...
Africa.
You think? So it sounds like apricots. So, right. So in fact, the Maharal writes that, I'm not sure what Afriki is, but I'll tell you what it isn't. It's not Africa, which is interesting that he says that. But again, he writes that he has a tradition that Afriki and Africa are not the same.
Well, it seems to support the whole idea of the Ethiopians, the Lempa, the Danites.
Right. But the Maharal writes specifically that Afriki and Africa, even though they sound an awful lot like it, are different places. So we don't really know where these places actually are. So it's an interesting question, which I don't have a very good answer to.
Based on the
right, hip, hop, skip, and a jump. Only on Shabbos.
Based on the fact that we don't know where they are from anymore, does that also kind of nullify them as a nation?
Maybe? No, no, not at all. Not at all. Again, assuming the 10 tribes still exist,
not the 10 tribes, I'm saying other ones, potentially
the non-Jews. Again, the Samaritans now, that's what we call them. Okay, that's where they are. That's fine. Nothing wrong with that. So, there you have it. So, this is an interesting statement, but that's who it is. Now, so they said, let us join you. Right? We're happy to help. So, what's the response?
Also, what's the motivation for that?
So, let's see. The assumption is the motivation is to mess things up.
Ah.
Right? That I can understand. Right. Here they are. They want to get in on the inside.
They want to be like a fifth column.
Correct. Exactly. Vayomer lehem Zerubbabel v'yeshu v'shar roshei avos l'Yisrael lo lachem v'lonu livnos beis l'Eloheinu ki anachnu yachad livne radonoi Elohei Yisrael kasher tzivanu melech korash ha-melech korash melech paras. So he says, listen, we appreciate your offer. Thank you very much. We'll definitely keep your resume on file in case we have a need for you. Right, but at this point, don't call us; we'll call you. Right? In fact, the specific, you know, laws of the king. Right? King Koresh told us to build it, and therefore we're going to build it. Now, why didn't they want the help? So again, there are two approaches. One obvious approach is they saw what was going on. They said, you know, with help like this, right? We need this like a third armpit. Right? This is not something that we necessarily are looking for. Not at all. That's one approach. The Gemara, however, interesting, has a different approach. The Gemara thinks that there is a problem in letting a non-Jew be involved in this. If you look at the Mishnah Erech, it says, Ovikom Rabbi Meir Omer Narach Avalo Ma'arich, Yudame Marach Avalo Narach, Vezev Zev Modim Shin Nodim Nidarim. So the question is, what is a non-Jew allowed to offer to the Beis HaMikdash? So we will see probably again next week, we just saw in Daf Yomi, that a non-Jew is allowed to send a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, right? There are, that the Beis HaMikdash does accept carbonos from there, but only limited ones. There are things that we will accept and there are things that we won't accept. Where do you see that? So the Gemara says, Hilchos Yedivah Meir Mestab, the Ksiv Lo Lachem Lon Liv Nos Beis HaLokeinu. To the fact that it's limited, the Gemara says, there seems to be a support here. It says, listen, sorry, we can't accept your help. We got to do it ourselves. Which the Gemara is understanding, it's not that they're arguing that we don't want your help. It's not going to be that helpful. Right? It's like, it's like the basic chassan class they tell you. The first time your wife asks you to do the dishes, you should break something. And she'll never ask you again. Right? She'll decide she doesn't need that type of help. Right? So too here, what we are assuming that the help like this we don't need. They're assuming that no, actually there is a halachic problem. I'm sorry, we're building a Beis HaMikdash that has to be done by Avodah Ivri, that has to only be done by Jews. Right? So that's what one opinion is. Rava says, I'm a Rava, Mishum Rifi Yadayim. He said, no, they didn't say no because there's a halachic problem. They said no because they realized this isn't going to be helpful. They knew that they were what they were trying to do. So there is an this is a machokas in the Gemara. Why did they say no? Did they say no because there was an issue with them doing it? Or did they say no because it just wouldn't have been helpful? The Rambam actually picks up on this. It says, Goshe is not the most with the Varm Ha'ilu, Oshe is not the Vasos Imam Bechinam. There are certain things that if they offer to pay for or they offer to help with, we say no. So in fact, the Rambam holds that the reason why is because what? Is because there is a halachic problem in having a non-Jew build the Beis HaMikdash. When it comes to building the Beis HaMikdash, which we should hopefully be doing soon, only Jews are going to be working.
So does that mean paying for things and maybe supplying?
Right,
all of those are out.
Right, nope, we're going to handle this one ourselves.
Totally ourselves.
Thank you. Thank you for your offer. We appreciate it. But,
thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah. So, Pasuk Dalet. Vayhi am ha'aretz merapim yidei am Yehuda u'mavhalim osam livnos. So, this doesn't stop the Kutim. They're still doing whatever they can to stop it. So what do they do? V'sochem aleim yoatzim lehafer atzasam kol yemei karash melech pras v'an malchus daryavish melech pras. From the time of Koresh, the time of Daryavish, they hired lobbyists, it says. And these lobbyists went to the king and they argued to the king that in fact this has to stop. And we're going to hear about this lobbying in quite clearly here. So it says, so we have, there are, as we said earlier on, probably don't remember this from last year, the first king is Koresh, the second king is Achashverosh, the third king is Daryavish. So Koresh is the one who says, you can build. We generally assume that we'll see also that it's Koresh who also says you have to stop building, and Achashverosh does not allow them to come back. There is a lot to be said, more than we're probably going to say, regarding the interplay between the story of Esther and what's going on, right? We'll discuss it a little bit, but there are opinions. If you remember, when Esther comes to Achashverosh and says, what do you want? He offers, Ad chatzi ha-malchus v'seos. I'll give it. So there are, the Medrash says, he says, sir, I'll give it to you, but don't ask for me to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. But listen, this is off the table right now.
So how come that's not in the Megillah?
What? Well, oh, it's alluded to. It's alluded to. Ad chatzi ha-malchus. Like, what does it mean? I'll give you half. He really would have given her, he has 120, he'd give her 60. That was offer. So he says, yeah, I'll give you what you
says
want.
It a couple times.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Darius being the child of Esther.
We will discuss that, actually, hopefully today we'll get to it. But then we assume, right, that according, there is definitely a tradition that Darius is the son of Esther. We're going to have to see if that really comes through. But that's what we're talking here. So It says, "Ubemachus Achashverus betchilas machuso kosfu sitnal yoshve Yehudim Yerushalayim." So they go and they write this accusation against the people in Yerushalayim. Now, this is an interesting choice.
What is it that they're writing against?
They're writing a letter. You'll see. We're going to actually see the whole letter. But this is an accusation, meaning that the Jews are doing bad stuff. You're going to have to do something about
it.
Now, Rashi and Esther, right, says, who are these people who are doing it? So Rashi here says, Aseres b'nei Haman, Ra'isi b'seder ha'olam, Elu asarasha kasu sitna al Yehuda v'Yerushalayim. These people who write this letter are actually the ones who, they are actually the sons of Haman. Rashi tells us.
Who were Kutim.
No, they were hired by the Kutim. Remember, the Kutim hired people to do this. So the people that legal were hired,
aid.
What?
They were the legal aid.
They were the lobbyists.
So they were hung?
Well, they were hung later. Right. Yeah. Remember, this is a different part of the story.
Find the laptop.
Right.
So by now the Kutim have been in Israel for...
not terribly long.
20 years?
No, more than that. It's around 100 years.
Yeah.
We're talking about 100 years.
Right.
That's a significant amount of time. Yeah. Right? Remember, there's a certain amount of time they're there before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Then you have 70. Right? This is very second, third generation. So he says that Rashi has a tradition that the people that were hired to stop the building of the Beis HaMikdash were actually the children of Haman. Kamosha Kosta B'Sefer Ezra. What was this accusation? To stop the people from coming to Israel. They wanted to cut off the immigration to Israel. So at the time, so obviously this was a family business. Achashverosh takes over. Haman is his right-hand man. Haman's kids are saying, don't do this. Achashverosh is not doing it. It's interesting when, if you look at the Megillah, okay, we're not going to get too into this, but by the first Suda, by the second Suda, that Esther makes for Haman and Achashverosh, in each time he says, what do you want? Achatzi ha-malchus v'seos. After Haman is killed, and we have the first day, you know, where the Jews fight to defend themselves, and Esther and Mordechai come back, Achashverosh says, what can I do for you? He does not say, Achatzi ha-malchus v'seos. Once Haman's out of the picture, he's not as closed to the idea of building the Beis HaMikdash. So it's very interesting, the interplay here between the books. So according to this is Rashi in Esther telling us that this is real, this pasuk that we just read, right, those are the sons of Haman. Now the word sitna, does anyone know where else the word sitna appears in the Chumash? Not Rabbi Sitner, stop it. Shlomo, that was a bad guess.
Ridiculous.
What? Sin is an accusation. I think what was Art School say? Something like that. So it says, if you remember, there were three wells that were dug by Yitzhak. The second one was called Sitna. Oh. And Parsha told us. What? So...
for Jewish trivial pursuit.
Right? So again, the Ramban on that pasuk in Toldos says the name is related. He said that each of the Beis Bate Mikdash are connected the three wells. Hasheni Koroshma Sitna, Sham Kosham in Arisham, who are Bais Hasheni Shakaroso Kishmo, Shakosabo, Ubamachus Achashvevus, Bethios Machus, Kosov Sitna, Al Yoshi Yushrem, the whole Yom of Hoyon Rasitna, Ashech Rivu, Vagolomi Menu. He said that the whole second Beis HaMikdash was not a smooth time. That's why the second well is called like this Sitna. Accusation, because that's what always went along. It's not until the third Beis HaMikdash, which is connected to the third well, which is called, anybody?
Rechavot.
Rechavot, very good. That is correct. that the third well, which is called Rechovot, that is, things will all be good then. Excellent. So he goes and he writes this sitna on it. Now, so they write this letter, and what does it say? So it says, "Bimei ach artach shasta kasa bishlom misrodas tivol ushar kinovsov al achartashta melach prasa kovdan nishtovim kasa aramis maturgan aramis." What's notable about this pasuk?
Aramaic.
Right. What's notable in this pasuk is hardly any word is clear what it means, because we just switched to Aramaic. And in fact, we're going to be in Aramaic for some time now. So, one is we have to discuss what did this pasuk just mean, right? The rest of this parak is all in Aramaic, right? And in fact, next parak again, we're gonna do some Aramaic, right? This is a rare case of Aramaic at length in the Navi, and Ksuvim actually. So first thing he says, a letter to Achartashta. Who's, one second, I heard about Koresh, I heard about Achashverosh, I heard about Daryavish. Who is this guy? Who invited him to the party? Famous Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, Tana hu Koresh hu Daryavish hu Achartashta. He said that in fact, this is just another name for Koresh. Koresh Imalach Kosher Hayu. His name, we called him Koresh because he was a kosher. Similar little play on the letters there, right? He was the one who Cyrus invited us back. That's why. Achartashta al shem achuso. This word achartashta is the equivalent of paro or avimelech or prime minister or president or king. It is just a title for the person in charge. So the person who was in charge, who was the ruler in Persia, was called the achartashta, right? So this is the equivalent of saying Mr. President. He says, Umashmo Daryavish Shmo. He says, his name actually was Daryavish. What?
The Midrash Tabiel, is that part of the title, or is that somebody else's name right next to it?
What, right next to what?
No, it says, in the days of Archatashta, comma, Bishlam, comma, Midredat, comma, Tava et al, comma, and the rest of their companions.
Right,
so
right.
Who's
right,
the
right.
et al in after all?
Right, again, so again, right. So these are the writers.
Okay.
Right, the first ones are all the writers. Al Achartashta, writing to Achartashta, right? So this is the equivalent of me saying, to Mr. President Trump, the Donald. So, you know, one is his name, one is his title, and one is, you know, he's referred to as. That would be the same idea. So that is the opinion of the Gemara. Rashi supports that. Rashi is bimei archatashta hu koresh malapras. Right, minyan osius so koresh olu l'minyan osius dayavish. In fact, he says the gematria of the word koresh is the same as the gematria of the word dayavish, which is pretty much true. Both of them are kind of 520, right? If you leave out the vav from koresh, what?
What's the comparison word mean?
Well, again, these are just two names of his.
Okay.
Right? 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 Cyrus and Darius would be the translation.
I see. Okay.
Right? So, again, if you leave off the vav from Koresh, it kind of works. V'chein matzinu b'meseches Rosh Hashanah hu Koresh hu Dayavis hu Achartashta Koresh al Shmosh shemel kosher hu haya Achartashim ha-machus v'seidu olam matzati Dayavis hu Achartashta v'chol machus kula nikros Achartashta. That this is the equivalent of Paro, right? Paro just means Pharaoh, not the name of a particular leader, right? Mr. President, right? All the same. The Baal HaMaor disagrees, and historically, it's very hard to defend the Gemara and Rashi, right? There definitely seems to be more kings out there. Right, Achartashta would probably translate it as Artaxerxes, right? Which would seem, from whatever we found, to be a different person. So he says as follows. He quotes, Pirish hanachon lefi apshat zesha kosov mitam koresh v'daryavish Achartashta melapras shloshim malachim hayu. No, they're not all one person. Cyrus is one king, Darius is another king, and Artaxerxes is another king. etc. So this is a matter of disagreement as to whether or not this Achartashta and Koresh is the same person or it's not the same person, right? Historically, it seems that the Baal HaMa'or makes more sense, right? You don't want to reject the Gemara. It could be the Gemara is not meant to be taken literally, but that's the story here. Obvious question here is, why did we just go Aramaic? What happened there? Rav Schwab, in number 12, I'll get back to 11, says the story is now told in detail in Aramaic. It is not quite clear, at least to me, why the text now switches to Aramaic.
Why wouldn't you think that it's so we could actually quote the letter?
Ah, we'll get to that. Perhaps the author, Ezra Sover, intended this supposed to be understood among the widest possible audience as Aramaic had become the popular vernacular among the Jewish people at the time. The Das Sofrim, however, sees it your way. He says, "Kedei lisa musag meduyak al kol ma she'ira bein Yisrael l'gayim lo nichtav al kach be'ivris uvo ha'tuodos l'shonim ba'aramis." He said, in terms of being exact here, rather than translate the letter to Hebrew, they gave it in Aramaic. Now he points out, he says, why? He says, because Aramaic is somewhat of a holy language. Right? He says, "V'aramis ha'isot tamid k'safa shniyah livnei Yisrael." There's always a second language. "V'imei Avram avinu yesh bagam kedusha misuyemes." So that's why, he says, "Ilo nichtava dvarim b'safa acheresh shekula chol lo ha'yu dvarim nichtava b'sefer b'lashon zeh." Had it been written in French or in Greek or something, they would not have written it. But since they were able to get it in the as close to the original as possible, and it still could be put in, that's why we switch over to Aramaic. So for better or for worse, make yourself comfortable. We're in Aramaic now for the next bit.
So who's saying, because we're having this discussion yesterday about the holy language, who's saying that Aramaic is possibly
holy? Right, so again, we mentioned, I think, yesterday that Aramaic goes back to Adam HaRishon spoke Aramaic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, we'll see. If some one day we would do Daniel, right? Daniel is basically entirely in Aramaic.
There's parts of Dami that we see in Aramaic.
What?
Are there any other languages that
Aramaic makes it into the Torah? Anyone know where?
I don't.
Two words. Yigar Sahadusa.
Ah, right.
By Lavan, that is correct. It says that when Lavan and Yaakov make an agreement, they put a pile of stones. It says that Lavan called it Yigar Sahadusa, and Avra and Yaakov called it Gal Aid.
Gal Aid.
Right. Right. What does Gal Aid mean? A pile that is a witness. What does Yigar mean? Yigar is a pile, and Sahadusa is a witness. Right? Even in the Torah, you have at least one example where there is Aramaic.
So having such good
guesses. What? My good friend iPhone 10.
I haven't killed her.
Mm-hmm. There you have it. So, I believe you're right. So, it's very shy. So the letter is written in Aramaic, it says specifically. Rochem bal ta'im v'shimshei safra kosu igra chada al Yerushalayim ha'chatashta macha k'neima. He says that Rucham, the counselor, and Shimshi, the scribe, wrote the following letter regarding Jerusalem to King Achartashta.
So King Pharaoh?
Mr. President. Edayin Rucham bal ta'im v'shimshai safu sharkana vashon dinei v'afarsachtei tarpoloye afarsayei archivayo bevraya shustayo elma. So he says, here I am representing the people from various countries, the Babylonians, the people from Shushan, etc., etc. Right? And the people from all over. Ushar umaya di hagli asnapar rabba vi yakira, behosev himo bekiria di shomran ushar avar narakonos. We are representing all of these countries that were in fact placed in Israel by basically the great leader, And that great leader is, of course, referring to Sancheirib. So they say, we are writing a letter on behalf of all of the people that were living in Israel prior.
But the Kutites are not mentioned.
Well, yeah, they probably fall under one of the other categories.
Okay.
Right? So it says, Dinar parshegen igrosav di shalchu ilohu alachasta malka, avdach enosh avar narakanas. So this is the letter we, your service, are thanking you from the people who are living on the other side of the river. Right? The river here being the River Jordan. So he said, the Jews have been sent to you, by you back to Jerusalem. They are building a rebellious and bad city. They have built walls and they have strung out foundations. A few interesting points here. This is perhaps the first time that Jews are referred to as
builders.
Jews.
Oh, Jews.
Right, they refer to them as Yehudayim, right? Yes, right. We are known as Bnei Yisrael usually, Ivrim, right? The fact that we're known as Yehudayim, this is, I think, the first time in history that Jews are referred to by the name Yehudi.
Did this take place before Mordechai?
Right, Mordechai HaYehudi.
Right.
Yes, it did. So
it also sounds like, again, right, the first time we're mentioned, and we're mentioned in an anti-Semitic kind of way from the very beginning.
There you have it. So in fact, you look at Rav Schwab, he points this out, number 13. He said, after the exile of the 10 tribes, the remaining Jews in Israel were called Yehudim, because most of the remaining Jews were from the tribe of Yehuda. The other remaining tribe was Binyamin, but they were in the minority. Upon returning to Israel at the time, they were still called by the same name, Yehudaya, from which the name Jews in common usage today. So Rav Schwab believes that this is the source where we have the idea that Jews are called Jews, Yehudim.
So these the minorities are probably from the tribe of Yehudim.
What? We've discussed previously that I think that this is probably wrong. I think this is not true. According to this, if we would say that this is true, that Jews is short for Judeans, right, then I would tell you that Rabbi Hillel Goldberg is not a Jew.
Because
he's a Kohen. Right? Rather, in fact, if you look at a pasuk that Maxwell was just referring to, which is?
In the book of Esther.
Right, what does it say?
Where it's at the very end of the book of Esther, Mordechai...
Even before that, Ushmo, Ish Yehudi haya b'shushan habira, Ushmo Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish Ish Yemini. What tribe is he from?
Benjamin.
So why is he called a Yehudi then?
Right,
this
term.
Right, but if Yehudi comes from the word Yehuda, you've got a problem. So the Gemara says that the word Yehudi actually stands for Yehudi. What is Yehudi? Was Yichud? What?
Alone? Solitude?
Across the
one of.
Right? Meaning what? Meaning that he's a monotheist. Yehudim are Yichud, believe in one, Echad. Right? So therefore, we are called Jews probably because we're monotheists.
But we didn't Yehudim give ourselves that name, it sounds like.
What? Well, that's unclear. It's very interesting. I think the reason that I strongly believe this to be the right answer is because back in Bereishis again, Esav has some wives, and one of them is called Yehudis Bas Be'eri. So Rashi says her name wasn't really Yehudis, but he called his wife Yehudis so his parents would think she's religious. Right? That's what Rashi said. Well, wait a second. He was trying to say that she's a descendant of Yehuda,
right,
who wasn't born yet? Right? But rather, Yehudis, like Yehudi, would come from Yehudit, right, some of that she was a monotheist. She wasn't an idol worshiper. That's what he was trying to.
So the corruption of the chet to the
hey. Not a corruption, you know. It's a swap. Right. So again, and therefore, according to this, assuming that Yehudi means that someone's a monotheist, then even Hillel Goldberg is a Yehudi. Even he is a Jew. It's a radical statement, but you know. But it's interesting. This is arguably the first time it's mentioned. Rabbi Schwab assumes that it comes from Yehuda. There's room to argue this. Interestingly, so we mentioned Yerushalayim here, but it's through slander. Right? He refers to Yerushalayim as what? The rebellious and bad city. Well, that's not very nice, is it? So this, it's interesting. The Mishpatzo Zav oftentimes quotes Rav Meir David Wally, right? The Ramad Wally, right? For which Wally World was named after. No, probably, I don't think so. Right? Was a student of the Ramchal, and he wrote a parish on the Navi. The parish, I believe, was never published, but there is a fellow named Yosef Spinner who had the manuscript and gave the manuscript to this fellow Weiss, and who quotes it all the time here. I happen to have gotten to Rabbi Weiss through Rabbi Spinner. I know Rabbi Spinner through other places, and he's the one, and I said to him, by the way, thank you, I very much enjoy your stuff through that. And he said, oh, you got it. He's the one who gave me his phone number and put me in touch with him. He was very helpful. Yeah. So again, what he writes tends to be more on the Kabbalistic side. So he quotes, V'Hashem Yisbarach Hainich Rosham Ha'elosh Yikwas Ha'irah Kodesh Yushalayim B'Shem Genai Kazeh. Why did God allow them to refer to Jerusalem in this way, the holy city? Obeys Tamim. Ha'achek Deli Hi Parah Mehem L'Basov. Let them sin and they'll pay for it in the end. That this would be, we in fact did not treat Jerusalem properly, but if people, right, you know, it's, you know, people, it's the way it always is. Everyone has that little sibling that you pick on, right? But if someone messes with your sibling, oh boy, right? So too, you know, God might not be happy with us, but if someone messes with Yerushalayim, he's going to come back swinging. So, now, interesting, the Malbim points out here and says, wait a second, what's this letter trying to do? Right? On the one hand, oh my goodness, they're building the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, of course they are. I told them they could. We want you to retract it? Well, we know from Achashverosh in the Megillah, once the king signs something, there's no retracting. Right? So what were they trying to accomplish here? He said, that's why the focus is on the walls. He's focusing on their building walls. Why? You gave them permission to build a building. Right? They're building walls. Right? The walls.
Foundation and walls.
Right? Meaning that that the only reason that you build walls around your city is if you want to defend it. If they're building foundations and walls, that means they're planning a rebellion. Right? Yeah, you told them they could build a Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, that's for sure. But what they're doing right now, oh beloved king, is going way beyond and they're making trouble. Yes?
All right, so, one is, walls are not inherently needed in a Beit HaMikdash. So, that's, but two is geographically, Israel is right on the verge of different empires that are constantly competing, and so you could argue that the walls are meant to protect.
Well, I imagine now, could you argue that it's probably,
the Greeks are, the Greeks.
Right, now can you argue it's probably true, right, to go beyond. So, obviously, you know, not only that, but they were being attacked by the Samaritans.
Yeah.
Samaritans. So, you know, they weren't particularly good Samaritans, right? So that's why they were building it, but that's what they're using. You'll note that's the focus here. They said, you know, they're building walls,
maybe
they're building foundations.
The Good Samaritan is pointed out as being particularly good is because the Samaritans had a reputation.
Right, as opposed to all the other ones.
Ka'anya
di'ale habala malka di'hen ker yasa dachtis nabe v'shirai yistakalun mida b'lov v'halach l'ogun itzon v'abtoch marach m'rehit tahanzik. He says that, you know, you probably know now that they're building a city, they have established the walls. As soon as that, once the walls are up, they're going to stop paying taxes. Because they'll say, what are you going to do to us? So that's the focus here. The focus here is, you told them they can build a Beis HaMikdash, and in fact, what they're doing is they're taking advantage of you. Ka'an ko kabre di malach hechol malachna v'arvas malko go arich roino v'mechezei. So he says, listen, we obviously love our king and we can't sit by idly when people try to take advantage of him. And therefore, being the good citizens that we are here to tell you that, you've got a problem right here in
River City.
And it's pool. Right. The Yevaker Bisvar de Kharnya the Avhasach Atishtach Bisef the Khrain of Tinada the Kiryasa Dok Kirya Marada and Kasma Alchin Midani Ishtador of Din Bagava Min Yomas Alma Alden Arkiasa Dakhir Khravda. He said, look back at the history books. This is a rebellious city, right? This is the city that fought against, successfully against Sancheirev, right? This is the city that fought Nebuchadnezzar, right? These are rebellious people. You made a mistake by allowing these people to get back in there. Yes.
There's this my translation is this at 14. Now, insomuch as we are desirous of ruining the temple, do you get anything like that?
No. Nope.
You didn't say it, so it's sort of like, what is this that I've got?
Well, again, the little translation, right, is Ka'an al kawi di marach hechala marachna.
Which means?
We want to salt the palace.
Uh-huh.
Right. So, meaning that we want you to stop this for your own good, right? Salting the palace, one of the ways that they're translating is definitely that.
Got it. Okay, I didn't
So he said, remember, this has always been true. Mahodian anachna l'malka, and we hereby inform the king, the henker yasa dachtis nabe v'shurei yishtakulun l'kabel deno chelak b'avar nara l'olei silach. If you allow this to go on, forget that you're going to lose Jerusalem, but everybody on this side of the river, you're going to lose it all. Once people see they can stop paying taxes and get away with it, so what am I paying taxes for? So we're telling you, this is trouble. Piskam ashrach malcha al rechum ba'al ta'em v'shim she'esfar v'shar kanavason di yosfim b'shamrayim v'shar avar nar shalom keis. They said, so therefore we send this letter on behalf of with the signatories, on behalf of everybody, and here is the list, etc., etc. That's the letter that says, istavdi shachun alona mafarish v'keri kadmai. The letter gets sent to the king, and it gets read in front of him. Okay, so we have now, the king receives this letter. How does he react? Uminisim te'em uvakaru v'ishtachuchu di kiryosadach min yomos alma al-malkin misnase marad v'ishtadav mis'abarbe. And he goes and he reads, and he looks into it, and in fact it's true that the city of Jerusalem has rebelled time and time again. As we said, it rebelled against Sancheirev, who was the head of Ashur. It's rebelled against Babel, right, under Nebuchadnezzar. And again, those were the previous two kingdoms that controlled the area. So if they did it to the last two kingdoms, so he realizes there might be some truth in this. And also, in fact, they realized that over the years there were other kings that were charging taxes there. Kansimutim Levatri Gurusa Ilach for Kiryasa Docho Tisbane Ad Minitam Yisasom. So therefore the king sends an order and he said they tell him you've got to send an order stopping the building. Uzihir and Havishol Mevar Aldono Rama Yishtage Chavol and Haskoskos Malkin. Right, and be careful not to make the mistake the previous made, other kings who fell for this. Adayin min di parshegen ishtavna di ar tachshasta malkar kari kadam rachum v'shem shisofer kalasan azul v'viru yushalayim al yudal vitu him adrei v'choyel. So he said, you got to do what you can, send in the army, make them stop. And with that, what does he do? Chavdalud be'edayin b'teiros avidas beis aloha di Yerushalayim v'havid b'tala ad shnars tartin l'machosh le'yavrish melech pras. So the king, whether it was Koresh or Achartashta, says, okay, this has got to stop. And with that, all work on the Beis HaMikdash stops until the second year of Darius. Yes?
Okay, so there's two thoughts on this. One is we don't have lobbyists either, because we can't argue for ourselves why this is legitimate. But two is, the clear suggestion here, if this doesn't continue until the second year of Darius, and if Daryavich and Koresh and Arta are all the same, whatever his name is, are all the same people, clearly they can't all be the same people.
There are definitely multiple Dariuses. Right, there was another Darius beforehand, and the argument is there's going to be a Darius afterwards if they're all the same.
Okay.
Right. That, so again, the fact that there are multiple Darii, right? Right. That in fact is something that is for sure true.
But if we're able,
this would just be one more of them.
Okay. And so then, why don't we argue back? We're like back.
So again, we kind of get sideswiped, and eventually we will. The answer is eventually we will get people into power. Well, again, the question is, who are we going to use? If Haman is the right-hand man, and they hired the sons of Haman to do this, it's going to be very hard for us to get in. Yeah. Right. Eventually, we do get our man in, and that man's name is Nehemiah. Right? Nehemiah is in there, and in fact, he's going to go to bat for us eventually. But at this point, we just don't have the connections. It's one of those rare times in history that there's no Jews running the government.
And Mordechai,
again, assuming this is Koresh, this is before Achashverosh, and even the time of Achashverosh, remember Mordechai is not a player until much later in the game.
He's sitting on the sideline.
Right, until Haman's out. As long as Haman's in, Mordechai's on the out.
They can do it, and then the Kutai are successful and
right.
Stop it.
So this is kind of a prequel to Esther.
Right. Again, this is to a certain extent, you've got to put everything in order here. You've got your Ezra, your Nehemiah, your Esther, and your Daniel are all more or less in the same time period, right? And therefore, obviously, we're going to see, remember, if the building stops in the time of Koresh and it starts again in the time of Daryavish, Achashverosh is right in the middle, right? So this is talking, right, we're talking about before and after, and that's an important middle piece. Right, so that's all. So we all have to pull it together. Interesting. Going back to the sources, we'll finish them up now. The Shir HaShirim Rabbah has an interesting version as to why Koresh decided that we've got to stop this. Gozer Koresh Omer D'Avar Pras Avar D'Lo Avar Lo Yavar. He says, okay, no more immigration. Why did he do this? The sun was darkened when he left. One day, Koresh went out to walk, and he saw that everything, the markets were empty. He says, why is it that the markets are bare? Where are the people who are dealing with the gold? Where are the people that are dealing with the silver? So he said, the Mikdash, aren't you the ones who told the Jews they should go build their base on Mikdash? Once the Jews, there goes the banking system. Right? Manhun dehovim, manhun ksafim, all the people dealing with the gold and silver, they left. We're out of Jews, the whole economy is going to collapse. They've all packed up and they went to build their base on Mikdash. But he said, the gods of Rama, the Avar Pras, Avar Drova Loyavar. He said, okay, that's it, no more. No, the Jews stay here.
When was this written?
What? The Medrash?
Yeah.
What? A long time ago. So that is a different why Koresh was so interested in buying into this. He realized that, you know, letting the Jews leave the capital was not the best idea. You know, and then many people who had Jews leave for other reasons, not as noble,
right,
have suffered a similar fate. Rashi here on this, in the last pasuk, writes as follows: Ba'adin also he saw Batal Malacha Binyan Beis Alkim Asher Yisham Adshnas Shteim L'Dayavish Melech Pras Acher Koresh Melech Achashverosh Lokach Esther. So the Rashi says there was first Koresh, then was Achashverosh, and then was Daryavish. Right? Beno shel Achashverosh Yehu ben Esther. And he said, this is actually, this Rashi is one of the early sources that in fact Daryavish is the son of Esther. Hold that. He said, in fact, the building was stopped for 18 years. If you add up the amount of years that was left in Koresh and all the years of Achashverosh, plus the second year of Daryavish, you're going to come up with 18 years. In fact, from the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash until the point where they say that was 52 years. And we know, we have a tradition from Yecheskel that it was supposed to be 70 years. So these were the 18 missing years that led to the 70 years of the exile. When they start up again, that's the actual rebuilding, and everything gets done at that point. Now, the Gemara, this is a continuation of the Gemara before we said before, in that Koresh and Ahartashta and Daryavish are all the same person. The Gemara says, he says, what's the story with this Koresh guy? Good guy or bad guy?
It seemed good to say, well, again,
right. He started off really good, exactly. But then he said, stop building the temple.
So he's not so good.
So the Gemara says, he says, well, you know, Kasha, kam kodim shehichmitz, kam acher shehichmitz. At one point, it was before he became a bad guy. And the other thing we're referring to him after he became a bad guy. What did he do wrong? This is going to come up in the later parak. He went and he made all these donations to the Beis HaMikdash. Even after he stopped it, how can you say he's a bad guy? Now, Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Matunach, the Rahavim Merhakrim, and the Chochim, Erosh Mer, Matzin Rechai, Malka Ben Arayim. He said, we'll see afterwards. He only made a donation because he wanted to gain out of it. He wanted that God will protect him and his children. So what? A person makes a donation because they want God to protect them. That's such a bad thing, the Gemara says. I'm giving tzedakah because I want someone to have a refuah shleima. I'm giving tzedakah because I want to go to Olam Haba. Mar says, "Harez et tzadik gomer." That's wonderful. Okasha kam be Yisrael kam be Nachrim. No, it says that one is talking about a Jews and one talking about non-Jews. Now this is talking about King Daryavish. It says that Jews have a right to give tzedakah, and with a different idea. I'm giving tzedakah because I want you to name something after me. Right? That's fine. Right? But when non-Jews aren't allowed to do it. Everyone is very bothered by this statement. What?
That makes sense. There's a lot of good
why
people.
Right.
So forget that. We're talking about King Daryavish here. Daryavish, the son of Achashverosh. Daryavish, the son of Achashverosh, is also the son of
Esther.
Is he Jewish or is he not Jewish?
Unless he's the kid of Vashti.
So he's not the kid of Vashti. Again, you might be able to argue a father, but you have a pretty good idea who the mother is. Again, right. You know,
so that would make him Jewish.
Right. So why did the Gemara just get up and say, yeah, he could do things for a bad reason if he's Jewish, but not if he's not Jewish. So therefore, he's a bad guy. So we have someone here, right? This is a very tricky. Wait a second. Did the Gemara just say that the son of Esther is not Jewish?
Is it possible it could be the son of someone else?
Well, that's the question. It says, right, Rashi says that Daryavish is the son of, we just read, of Achashverosh and Esther. But then the Gemara comes along and seems to indicate that he's not Jewish. So many people point this out and they are very bothered by it. So there are a few different approaches to it. One approach is to say, in fact, this Gemara is following the opinion that we don't follow matrilineal descent. Right? right? Aval b'tovasolo. He said that when maybe it's only saying that we assume the person is Jewish from a negative point of view, but not from where, not from a positive point of view, meaning that it's a suffix. We're not really sure what this person is. Uberesha shana hu koresh hu dayavish hu achartashta. Omer b'tosos the dayavish zeh hu b'noshel Esther. Okay, ben Yisraelus hu Yisrael. Fil hagi basa the hich mizro chashiv elo ku'umos ha'olam. Omer selo zeh tzedakah b'shvil shiyechia b'ni. So the halacha katana suggests that in fact, if your father is not Jewish and mother is Jewish, you're not fully Jewish.
Whoa.
Right? You are suffix Jewish at best. The Dovev Meisharim also deals with the question. And he says, very interesting, he says when it says that somebody whose mother, Gemara says someone whose mother is Jewish and father is not Jewish is kosher, which we understand to be Jewish, they say kosher just means he's not a mamzer. But really, he's not Jewish.
Who are these people?
But these are major sources here. So there's a lot to be said about this, but this is a major source. Discussing, you know, whether or not somebody who is father is not Jewish is considered a complete Jew. Whether they can marry, if it's a woman, can they marry a Kohen, etc. Well, just, I'll take you in a second, let me just end this. Rav Schwab writes very interesting. Here he writes, as we noted earlier, the Chachamim called the king Daryavish ben Esther, Daryavish the son of Esther. However, it's very difficult to say he was literally the son of Esther. This is so for many, many reasons. First, if he was her son, he would be a Jew, and as such, he would be obligated to keep the Torah and mitzvahs. We have no evidence that he did so, nor was he criticized for not doing so. In fact, the Chachamim called him Melech Kosher, a good kosher king. According to Tosfos, right? Right? Esther used preventive birth control to avoid having a child from Achashverosh. And also, if Dayavish was literally the son of Esther, he would be only a young boy at the time he ordered the resumption of the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? Where it aren't a lot of years we're talking about. Achashverosh is only the king for 14 years. The Esther story is 7 years in. That takes a few times. Then they have to have a kid. This Dayavish is what, 5 years old?
He's going
to
be young, yeah.
He said, it's hard to accept this. Esther became the queen during the 7th year of Achashverosh's reign, and he reigned a total of 17 years.
So it's
14. Right? 14 years, that's right. Thank you. He was succeeded by Yavish, who permitted the construction in the 2nd year. So Dayavish would have been at most a boy of 10 years when he ordered the resumption of Esther. This would be highly unlikely. So therefore, Schwab does not think that the Dayavish that we're talking about is the son of Esther. Perhaps this is a king that was influenced by Esther. That Esther, in fact, advised him. Esther had his ear. Esther, you know, was a mother figure for him. But because of this issue, where there are many things pointing on to the fact that this Dayavish was not Jewish, and again, you could try and give these original answers to assume that somebody whose mother is Jewish, the father is not totally Jewish, right? But the simple understanding is not that way. The simple understanding, we understand that we follow matrilineal descent, period. If your mother is Jewish, that's all what matters. It doesn't really matter at all, the fact that your father is not Jewish. And therefore, when it says that this is the son of Esther, for this reason and other reasons, we should not be taking it literally. So that's a major statement.
So Rav Schwab is saying she didn't have any children.
Well, I don't know if she knew that this was not her child.
Don't we know that Esther also was with Mordechai at one point?
I mean, when she could have, right, beforehand, she could have had plenty of children. I don't know. Mm-hmm. We don't have any record of it.
No
record. Right. But in terms of...
Is she criticized for using birth control?
No. Not at all. She's in fact encouraged.
She's the opposite of anything.
Right.
To the Zalkashver.
Right.
He wasn't Jewish.
So in fact, right. So this happens to be, because one way or the other, it's a very important statement here. Either it's important because what we had mentioned from the get-go, this is the son of Esther, is not actually true, or you have to do something very creative about understanding what is going on with matrilineal descent.
We know, yes, from Sarah Bad Asher.
Yes.